Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the CD Digest, as we should have an awesome show tonight, as always, on here. And before we go into anything, I'm going to turn it over to Joseph England to talk about some of the stuff he might have done this past week, and since we ended on last Wednesday, and just talk about how you guys have been doing today and such.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, astronomy class has been pretty good to me. You know, last weekend watched the MAV TV 500 from my own couch. Hopefully next year I'll be going there in person to see the race over there. And you know, science spun the entire weekend away. But hey, you know, that's a little bit more green stuff in my back pocket.
Sounds like fun. And you know, I had a fun week last week as well, as I went to 2 Royals games, and kind of wished I was going this week, but not going to be able to for a while. But it was certainly a fun week, and, you know, I certainly enjoyed it. And then, you know, right now we're about to head into a chase to the important season, so it's kind of nice to relax just a little bit. But now, you know, the season's going to be closing out, and chase is going to be starting, so it's going to get a little hectic here lately. And then also I'm starting to work on starting with school, so interesting stuff there. But hope you guys had a good weekend as well, and sounds like it from what you guys talked about, but it sucks feeling that you weren't able to get to that race. Alright, so our first item up for discussion is that Turnstout Motorsport officially closes the number 30 NASCAR Kimball Truck Series team, but it seems like they'll continue to run the number 31 and the number 32 entries. So I'm going to start with Joseph on this and kind of give us your thoughts on the situation. You know, first it was that they were shutting it down completely, and then now it's just one team, and talk a little bit about that and such.
Yeah, Turnstout Motorsports shut down the 30 team with Ron Hornaday. He was fourth in points at the time, and it's very questionable with what happened. But what's going on basically is the owners, Harry Scott Jr. and I'm drawing a blind call. Steve Turner. Both of them, they're suing each other, basically. And it's not a good situation at all right now in terms of Motorsports. And basically what's going on is Ron Hornaday is out of a ride. It's that simple. It's going to be very difficult for him to get back in the series. But from what I'm hearing is he's trying to get back with MTS Motorsports, possibly, who he drove for last year. And if he could do that, he might not be contending for a title, obviously. He's a little bit too far back now after missing Mossport. But he would be considered for a top five spot, at least in points, which is something, at least, for his age. And they're basically the only other Chevrolet team right now besides GMS Racing, which obviously isn't ready for expansion at this time. And TSM is going to do now, it looks like, is that they're going to split up again, and H. Scott Motorsports is going to be the Nationwide Series, and Turner Motorsports is going to be the Truck Series. But once again, that could all change if for somehow or another their owners can figure things out. But as of now, Ben Kennedy is staying in 31 truck. 18 employees were fired yesterday. However, Turnstout Motorsports is looking to help them out a little bit, so they might be able to find someone else to go on, find some more roles for these guys that are working for them. And then the 32 truck is going to continue to split drivers. But once again, no one said anything about the possibility of Ron Hornaday returning to Turnstout in the 32 truck. They just said that he won't be running a 30 truck. So we'll see what happens from there. And also, Ron Hornaday was racing on a week-to-week basis. So I'm surprised that this came, this finished, this he was racing as far in the season as he did. I believe that after I spoke to him in Dover, I thought he had one or more, two more races left from what it may have seemed like. But Steve Turner really invested in him, and he made sure that Ron Hornaday was out there on a weekly basis, and it showed. He was the strongest Chevrolet truck every single week besides when Austin Dillon was racing in that three truck, and that was only for one race. So it's going to be very costly for Turner Scott Motorsports to lose Ron Hornaday.
Glenn?
You know what? This little lawsuit thing here, this could actually affect Turner Scott Motorsports as a whole, because if these two owners do not settle things out or, you know, whatever they do in court, we could see Turner Scott Motorsports end up either losing more of its cars or quite possibly becoming just another team shut down due to court issues. And it would be really sad if this whole team, you know, were shut down because they can't figure out, you know, how to settle this all. Because Turner Scott Motorsports, even before with Turner Scott Motorsports, I don't consider them the Hendrick Motorsports of the Nationwide Series, which is now the Xfinity Series. Because week in, week out, they were always up there. They were competing for wins, and they got themselves a title in the truck series. So we'll have to see what happens, around the turn, because I would hate to see Turner Scott Motorsports, a very competitive team and very respectable team, shut down because of this.
And then we're going to go over to Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, with Turner Scott, that's just unfortunate with Ron Hornaday. He's fourth in the points heading into Mossport, only 19 out of the lead. I know you guys have been saying it was a race-to-race deal, and I think Hornaday said that himself. But, I hope he gets a ride. I mean, I think missing Mossport was huge. He needed the points. Now he's 64 back. So, I mean, unless he could have a similar comeback to 2011, I mean, I know he was, I forget how many points he was out, but I think he was 40-some out, I think heading into Kentucky back in 2011. So I think it's a possibility, but I just don't see it happening. I mean, even if he gets a ride, I mean, I think he's, like Joseph said, I think a top five would be reasonable. But, it's unfortunate because you see Ron Hornaday also bow for a championship, like I said, in 2011 until the whole Kyle Busch thing. So, he just hasn't had the breaks. I mean, with Kevin Harvick Incorporated closing at the end of the season and, of course, selling their equipment and then going to NTS Motorsports and not having the best of success, but, of course, having some strong runs at times and almost winning a few races. But, I wish the best for Ron Hornaday, for Nationwide, that's not a problem. I mean, they have Kyle Larson with the sponsorship. Same thing with Dylan Kwasniewski and the Rockstar Energy sponsorship. That's not a problem. They're fine financially. And I know with Ben Kennedy, I said last week, I think he'll be fine because, his mom's in France. And, and to see Cameron Haley make his truck debut, that was good to see, with his family sponsor. And also, don't forget about Taylor Malsom. I think if the 32 truck does finish off the season, he still has some scheduled races with his sponsor. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens throughout the rest of the year. And also for the K&N program as well. Going into next year. I mean, they still have some guys, some drivers laying around like Scott Heckert and Ben Rhodes and Kaz Grahl. Brandon Jones. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all works out next year. And like I said, indeed, it could help and work out in Cameron Haley as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how Turner and Scott, whatever they're going to do, like you guys have been saying, like one doing Nationwide, one doing trucks, what their future holds, and like even the future drivers, and see what will happen. So I'm going to be interested to see here the rest of the year what happens with Turner Scott Motorsports.
Yeah, you nailed it on the head. And I think that basically what's going to happen for them is Malsom and Haley and Rhodes are going to finish out the year for them. Malsom only has a couple of races left. Ben Rhodes has a few races left because he has school now. See, he only has two races left for them. And then Cameron Haley will have New Hampshire and Texas. So I think other than that, they're going to be fine for the 32 truck. But they might have one or two races open, so we'll see what happens.
All right, and I can't talk. Our next deal of discussion is Xfinity to become the new NASCAR Nationwide Series title sponsorship beginning in 2015. And I think this is one of the worst-kept sponsorship deals that we've heard for a while, because I think everyone knew going into today that it was going to be Xfinity. But I'm going to start with Kyle this time and try and give us his thoughts on this. And I know that they offer Xfinity in his area, so I'm sure he's happy about this. But take it away, Kyle.
Yeah, I think pretty much this probably went to the highest bidder, and Comcast Xfinity had the money to get to purchase sponsorship for the series. I mean, when you think about it, with Comcast, they own NBC Sports Network. They own all those networks, and they are a giant. Cable giant when it comes to that. I mean, being a Comcast customer myself, I mean, you know, they have the phone, they have the DVR, they have the internet, so they have just more than cable. And, you know, going content-wise moving forward, it definitely provides some more content, since they'll now be the sponsor of NASCAR's second series. So I think it's a good deal for NASCAR. I mean, I'd like to see how their partnership's going to be. And, of course, what I've been reading is this 10-year deal. Just seeing how it will move forward, and just to see how much they can branch out and hopefully bring some more fans to NASCAR's second series.
And then now I'm going to let NASCAR Joe take over with his thoughts.
Well, yeah, I think it's definitely a good thing. I'm really, really excited for this. I think that it's going to be an amazing partnership for NASCAR, obviously. It has a lot of potential to grow in something really huge, and that's what's going to be the big thing. NASCAR needs that. Nationwide did do a good job, obviously, of expanding it. But with Comcast, they have more resources than Nationwide. And plus, they're going to, as Kyle mentioned, they have NBC. So you're going to be seeing a ton of NASCAR advertisement all over any NBC product you could think of. I live in New York. We have the NBC headquarters right here. I guarantee you, if I go to the NBC store now, there's not going to be any NASCAR merchandise. But if I go in January when this partnership gets activated, bam, there's going to be a ton of NASCAR merchandise there like there used to be until they stopped being the NASCAR sponsor. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. It's going to be a great partnership. All the fans and drivers are excited. I just want to say one thing, though. I have people asking me, what in the world is going to happen if you don't have Comcast? And the answer is simple, nothing. NASCAR is not going to let them make races for the Nationwide Series pay-per-view or anything like that. So you have nothing to worry about. And they're even going to probably bring NASCAR on the web now, and they're going to make races have a live stream most likely over the next few years. I think that's going to be fantastic for fans, but it's going to kill ratings, unfortunately, which I don't want to see at all.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, you know, NBC already does live streaming with the Live Extra, which is what I use to watch NBC Sports Network, what I use to watch NASCAR America on sometimes. So, but now I'm going to take it over to Glenn to give us his thoughts.
You know what? I think a lot of NASCAR fans are going to Xfinity and beyond because, you know, this is definitely a huge deal. It's probably not as historic as like, say, landing the phone company Nextel back then, but this will definitely enhance the fans' thing. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe on New Year's Day, January 1st, they release, you know, a app that will get you closer to the action. The only thing that I hope to God that doesn't happen is that they release an app that crashes every time you open it, and, you know, has a very bad stream because I believe it was Joseph that brought up the point that they would probably stream a few races. I'm wondering if they'll bring out something similar to what Verizon had with the IndyCar 14 app. Because with that, you could have two onboard cameras while you're watching the actual race. So if Xfinity brings something out like that, and it's either a free deal or you have to pay something like, you know, $2.99 to get the app itself, then it would definitely improve, you know, the fan experience. But yes, it would definitely hurt the ratings because nobody will be watching it on TV. They'll want to watch it on their, you know, iPad, iPhone, maybe an Android or whatever device that, you know, people are using these days.
That's not going to happen. I guarantee it.
So you don't think they're going to make an app?
They're going to make an app, probably, yes. But it's most likely going to be run at the NASCAR app, and NASCAR would never charge anyone for their own app.
All right, anything else before we move on? All right. So this weekend was some pretty good racing this week, or last week, and, you know, the Canadian Tire Motorsports Park provides some fantastic racing, and I'm going to go through a panel here. I'm going to start with Glenn on this one. If you watch truck race, what did you think of it, and kind of your thoughts on the race?
Sadly, I did not see any of the Truck Series race because I was out sign spinning, but I did hear the finish, and it sounded like it was a really good finish to the very end, and German Carrozza came pretty darn close to winning his first Truck Series race.
Yeah, he was. I mean, Carrozza is definitely going to get himself a win before 2014
mm-hmm.
season closes out. I mean, he had a great run at Gateway, and then just kind of ran into some bad luck there at the end and lost the race. But, you know, I think he's definitely going to get a win soon. And, you know, he's really improved himself as a driver since moving over there to Red Horse Racing. So,
I interviewed him at Pocono, and he was describing to me the whole process of how not only he moved away from Mexico, he basically just packed up his bags and leaned in and said, okay, I'm going to run for Kyle Busch, and then he moved over to Red Horse, and it's definitely paying off for him. Last year, he just didn't know how to give feedback to his crew chief. This year, he has a new crew chief. That's a giant difference for him. He has Timothy Peters, his old crew chief, which kind of explains why Timothy Peters is struggling a little bit this year for Red Horse. But I think that, like you said, Yermak Carroga is right there running for victories every single week now. And as soon as he gets one win, guess what? Those wins are going to start piling on and on and on. And he's going to be a serious contender for this championship soon. And he's already up there in points. He's running in the top five nearly every single week. And that's a lot to expect from a sophomore driver. But as he told me, he dominated in Mexico. Why would he want to stay in the NASCAR Toyota Series when he has a chance to move up, especially if partners like NetTen Wireless and Otterbox, and you look at the standings right now, and he's right up there. He's only 48 points back. He's in fifth right now. He's right by Darrell Wallace Jr., who has two wins. He has 9 top tens already this year. And you know what? You can't really ask for more out of a guy that just came over to the sport recently, and he's not even from this country. So I think he has a lot of potential if he could just get the job done.
Kyle?
Yeah, regards to last week's race, I think road racing is fantastic. I've seen all the road races this year, and all top three of NASCAR series, they were all great. They all have action and everything, so... You know, for German Carrozza, I mean, well, first, before I go to that, I'd like to see the road course on the truck schedule. Maybe Watson's going to Road America. I mean, that would be great. Because I think what people miss out is that road course racing is great. And I'm saying that not as a fan, but more as a writer, because that's where all the action is. I mean, if you saw the cup race at Watkins Glen, I mean, you saw that duel with Avery Allmendinger and Marcus Ambrose. And those are two of the best road racers right now in NASCAR. And, you know, them just going for the win and gaining that chase spot, I mean, that was epic. So even in the trucks with that finish, I mean, I know Germán Carrera was so close. And I was glad that they didn't wreck each other in the end. It was a good, clean finish, and that's what I wanted to see. So, and I couldn't believe Ryan Blaney hung on for so many laps. I don't think he had the fastest truck, but, you know, the fuel lived, and he was on a one-stop strategy. So, you know, kudos to those guys. Trying to get back in the championship hunt after a couple of bad weeks. So, but for Germán Carrera, Brett, I just want to add what you said. Another race he had a shot at winning last year was Pocono in 2013, and I know he had the lead on a restart, and he lost it. And Ryan Blaney wound up winning the race. So you kind of had those two same guys battling on Sunday. So, you know, I think what Joseph was saying, I agree with him. I think once he starts winning, he will win multiple races. And I know a lot of people give him a lot of dislike toward him because of the whole Gateway thing. I'm not looking at that differently. I think, you know, two guys going for the win. I mean, Germán Carrera lets off the gas. The wind's out for him. Most likely he's done. He doesn't have a shot at winning at Gateway. So I think, you know, he's really progressed this year. And I think, like, you know, like I said, just what Joseph was saying, I think once he wins, he's going to win a lot. So I forget how many points he's out, but I think he'll definitely, I think he's going to get his first win this year. So I keep an eye on that 77 Red Horse Racing truck team here.
And, you know, I thought the race was pretty good as well. And, you know, I love road courses. I think the truck series should get one more. I don't know what track it would be, Road America, and then would be good as well. So it'll certainly be interesting if NASCAR will do that for 2016, possibly.
What I'm interested in is why haven't they gotten a Virginia International Raceway yet when so many teams test there? Because teams are testing there all the time for the road courses. Why not go there when it's one of the best road courses in the country, clearly?
Good point. All right. We're going to move on over to Atlanta for the NASCAR Nationwide Series race as Kevin Harvick captured the victory over there. And it was a very interesting race. Although there was only two cautions during the whole entire event, but I thought it was a good race. What did you guys think? I'll start with Joseph this time.
Do you repeat the question? I couldn't hear you.
Kevin Harvick won the NASCAR Nationwide Series race at the Atlanta Motor Speedway. And, you know, I thought it was a pretty good race, but there was only two cautions during the whole entire thing. But, you know, I thought it was good. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, the Nationwide race was definitely interesting. It was more of a strategy race than anything, which is okay. But at the same time, just two cautions enabled Kevin Harvick to dominate the race. He led all but, I believe, 36 laps. And those 36 laps were from pole sitter Chase Elliott, who was his JR Motorsports teammate. And JR Motorsports is flat out dominating in the Nationwide Series lately. They're having their best year ever. And that's better than when they ran with Brad Keselowski, nearly won a championship a few years ago. So they're doing great things. Then his best competitor all day was Joey Logano, and Joey Logano couldn't even keep up with him on Saturday night. So it was just a crazy race in general. And then you saw guys like Brian Scott and David Ragan have solid runs, but they weren't extremely competitive. But for David Ragan, that was a good race for him at his home track, running for the Biaggi team. I believe it was their fourth top 10 in the team's history since coming back after their hiatus in 2006. So it was definitely good to see David Ragan run well after struggling in the Cup Series of Front Row Motorsports. Then championship battle, we have an extremely close battle for the championship with Chase Elliott, Regan Smith, Ty Dillon, Elliott Sadler, and Brian Scott are all right there. But Elliott Sadler and Brian Scott are slowly creeping back out of it. And it seems like it's a three-car runaway, mainly a two-car runaway, actually, between Chase Elliott and Regan Smith. But if, as long as anything crazy doesn't happen to Chase Elliott over the next few weeks, where he doesn't finish, where Regan Smith or anyone else beats him by one or two more cars every single week, guess what? Chase Elliott is winning this championship, whether you like it or not. We're going to have an 18-year-old rookie in the championship at Homestead.
And now I'm going to turn it over to Glenn to give us his thoughts on the Nationwide Series race, if you watched it.
I did. It was pretty tame, really. And with only two cautions, that's pretty much what goes on with Atlanta these days. But yeah, Kevin Harvick has virtually dominated the series. The championship's getting tighter and tighter. And also, I'm not sure, Joseph, if you stay in contact with any Chase Elliott days, because I definitely think that Chase Elliott's going to be our champion this year. And the only problem that he's going to have is that there's a couple of tracks coming up that I don't believe that he's ever raced that in terms of the Nationwide Series, but yeah, I definitely feel like Elliott's going to be our champion, Chase Elliott, that is, and you know, that'll win for JR Motorsports.
All right, and then now I'm going to turn it over to Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the race, it was pretty tame. I mean, Kevin Harvick just ran away with it. And, you know, I think Joey Logano was close, but he couldn't even get up to him. I mean, you know, it was pretty much the same two guys on Sunday night as well. But I mean, the junior motorsports cars are just running fantastic right now. And then you're going into Richmond as well with Kevin Harvick winning the spring race. So I think there's a good chance that you could see him win again next week. And I think right now, I mean, you know, like what Joseph's saying, Elliott Sadler and Brian Scott are starting to slowly creep away from the battle. But, you know, it's not over yet, but you know, we still have a standalone coming up here in Kentucky in a couple weeks. So, don't count those guys out yet. I know right now it's Chase Elliott, Regan Smith, and Ty Dillon, three Chevrolets. But Chase Elliott and Regan Smith, like I said, junior motorsports, like Joseph says, having a fantastic year, even better than with Brad Keselowski. And he had it when he was had to battle with the top guys for the championship, when you think about it. So I think when you see guys like Regan Smith, Chase Elliott, Ty Dillon, Elliott Sadler, Brian Scott, Trevor Bayne. When you see those guys, you see an actual points battle, and I know that was because of the rule a couple years ago, because they said you know, you have to go for one series championship. Still, I mean, I think it's going to be a great battle coming to the end of the year. You know, a lot of questions still out there. Trevor Bayne, what he's going to do. I mean, you know, how can he get a couple wins before he leaves a Nationwide Series to go to Cup? With Chase Elliott, can he win? Can he win a championship as a rookie? You know, just there's so much out there still that, you know, so many big headlines we still have to hit on. I mean, can you see another first-time winner this year? So, you know, and like I said, with Kevin Harvick, of course, just flat out leading the last 159 laps, may I add. So, you know, and like I said, it's going to come down to Homestead. It's going to come down to that final lap. You saw it last year with Austin Dillon and Sam Hornish Jr. It's going to happen again. You know, I think right now, I mean, Chase Elliott and Regan Smith, they've been running just so close to each other. It's ridiculous. So I think when you see that, I think you're going to see that every single race the rest of the year. And see, and also with Joe Gibbs Racing, if they could compete with those junior motorsports cars, and they have not this year on the bigger tracks, just haven't had the horsepower. So it's going to be an interesting points battle going all the way down to Homestead.
Certainly so. And you know, now we're going to move over into the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series from Atlanta, where Casey Kane secured himself into the chase for the Sprint Cup by finally capturing a win this year. And Matt Kenseth, who is also trying to dig his way into a chase, came up just shy of the victory, but overall it was a pretty good race. So I'm going to throw it over to Glenn first to give us his thoughts on Sprint Cup Series race, if he was able to watch it.
Yep, I was able to watch it. I saw the whole thing, and, you know, good performance there from Kasey Kahne. I mean, I'll tell you one thing that was kind of interesting. The top lane just could not get going. I was really surprised by that because, you know,
that's
Atlanta.
That's not true. The high line did get going. It just didn't get going on the restart right away. But after a few laps, it did, and it was very effective for some drivers back in the pack.
I don't know which race you were watching, but it just didn't go. Anyway, also, not to be joking or anything, but if anybody knows my profile picture on Facebook, no, that cat that Kevin Harvick almost ran over, that is not me, and that was not any of my cousins that ran out there. I mean, that could have been a catastrophe, man. And a lot of the cars got a little squirrely out there as well. But, you know, nice job for Kasey Kahne. But I hope that Kasey Kahne got a much better trophy than a giant-ass toothbrush. I mean, yes, we all have to brush our teeth, you know, before we go to bed and all. But, you know, if I'm winning a Cup Series race, I want a better trophy than just a giant toothbrush that I could give to Angus the Giant or something.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good race myself as well. And, now I'm going to throw it over to Joseph for his thoughts.
Yeah, I thought the race was really, really great. There was so much passing throughout the day. But I do think the best car should have won, and Kevin Harvick was by far the best car throughout the race. Jeff Gordon had a close car, and he was actually running the fastest laps of the race after he got wrecked when he blew a tire in turn one. But unfortunately, he was two laps down. And thanks to the two green white checkers, he was able to come back, and he was able to finish on the lead lap, albeit in the 17th position. At the same time, Jeff Gordon didn't need the points, but he was going to be Kevin Harvick's biggest contender throughout the race, no matter what. And then Kasey Kahne just came out nowhere and flat out just took advantage of that clean air. And that's part of what NASCAR is trying to change for next year. They don't want as much of an influence on the clean air like there is this year on the intermediate tracks. I believe that they're going to be doing that with the lower downforce and a little less horsepower, not much less horsepower from what I'm hearing now. I believe that they're going to keep it around the same amount, considering they're going to be taking away that downforce. So it's going to be affecting the cars a lot next year in terms of handling. As for the race, I thought it was great. Danica Patrick had a top 10 finish. She was just outside of the top five. She finished sixth. It was her career best finish. And Eric Almirola had a solid run in ninth. He's getting ready for the chase. And I wouldn't be surprised if Eric Almirola makes it past the first round. I think he has the potential to get to the second round with the way RPM is at certain tracks. And if you look at the first three races, he has done very well at those tracks and tracks like those. So I think that's going to be something to look forward to for the chase for the first round. And then there were some disappointments, though. Tony Stewart came back. He was flat out flying to begin the race. He gained six positions in two laps. It was just incredible to watch what he was doing. It was like he was driving like there was no end in sight of life in general. Like, he was inside the top five at one point. Then he started slipping back. He fell back to 12th, but was working his way back inside of the top 10 until he just got wrecked by Kyle Busch. And then he blew a tire right after that. See, he only finished 170 laps of the race, yeah. But at the same time, hey, he showed he's here to win. And guess what? He's going to be contending for a win at Richmond. He has a decent history at Richmond in the past. And I don't see any reason as to why he wouldn't win. But there are a few guys that do need a win at Richmond if they want to make the chase. Specifically, Clint Boyer, Kyle Larson, Brian Vickers, and Paul Menard. Flo Menard has been the biggest underdog of the year, I believe. Every week he's racing near the top 10. He's having his best year of his career by far. But at the same time, what good is it if you're not winning races? And for these guys to make the chase, they're going to need to win races. Because right now, you're not getting Greg Biffle outside of that top 16 unless you get a win. It's that simple right now. And for Greg Biffle himself, he's starting to improve big time. Roush Fenway Racing has made giant gains over the past few weeks. As you can see, Carl Edwards, Biffle, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. all are performing slightly better. Not a ton better, but slightly better over the past few weeks. I think it's going to be big for them for the chase to see how they do, especially with Edwards leaving.
And now I'm going to throw it over to Kyle.
Yeah, I enjoyed Sunday night's race. I always enjoy Atlanta, just because, you know, it's a little worn out. And you can run any line there, and I agree with Joseph. I think the high line just not going on the restart, but not during the race. During green flag runs, it was fine. And, you know, we saw a lot, you know, and I think I brought this up a few times, you know, the pole sitter being Kevin Harvick. Pole sitters have not fared well at Atlanta. And, you know, I think the last pole sitter has won in Atlanta was March of 2006 with Casey Kane. And the same thing goes in the nationwide, just, you know, you just don't have the luck by starting on the pole. So I think it was a good race. I mean, with Casey Kane, he was in the right spot at the right time, you know. And another thing before I get to that is, the JGR cars, the pit crews on light, I think there was a disadvantage with Kevin Harvick being in the number one pit stall because he just could not get going at the end after his pit stop because the JGR cars were already ahead of him. Depending where you are and what track you're at, the timing line is right after the first pit stall. And in Atlanta, it's not. You have to actually go a little bit. So, you know, to get going, I mean, it took Kevin Harvick a little bit, and by the time he got there, he was second or third, you know, with the 20 or the 11 team coming out. So it was a good race. In the end, I mean, you saw with the pickers with Casey Kane. I think he had a fast enough car to hold off Kevin Harvick there in the end because Kevin Harvick, I mean, he was good all night, but it took his car a few laps to get in. It took him. He was better under green flag conditions. I mean, the restarts, he was okay. I mean, as long as he was starting first and he was on the inside lane, he was fine. But like I said, it didn't happen most of the night. So with Casey Kane, he was in the right place at the right time until the Martin Truex Jr. Kyle Busch thing happened. I mean, I would have felt really bad for Casey Kane if he did not win that race because of Kyle's move, because I know Kyle had a long night, of course, like Joseph said, with Tony Stewart. And then, you know, with Martin Truex Jr., those two have a little history, you know, going back to Watkins Glen. So it was interesting, you know, with the caution coming out and then, you know, then what escalated on the next restart with Kevin Harvick and Joey Logano and Paul Menard, like Joseph said, a sleeper. So it was a good race. I know I said that. It was just good because, you know, you saw Danica Patrick have a shot at the victory. I mean, she started on the outside lane, but she was on a fourth on that last green white checkered, fourth place. And, you know, she has come a far way. At least she stayed out of trouble all night, and she found herself in the top five at one point. So, you know, just for Casey Kane, I mean, you know, he had two tires in front of him, and he prevailed. So, you know, it's a big shot in the arm for Hendrick Motorsports, having all four cars in the chase. And one more thing I want to add is that, you know, Casey Kane on the bookends of the Atlanta Labor Day race. He won the first in 2009, and then he won the last in 2014. As Atlanta's going, of course, to March next year, and the trucks will be back as well next year. So really looking forward to it. Great weekend in Atlanta, so I'm ready for Richmond. So bring it on.
And the NASCAR Nationwide Series and the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series will be heading off to Richmond this weekend. We'll get into that later on. Our next news item is Michael Waltrip is to appear on Dancing with the Stars, and I'm going to start this topic off with Glenn.
Well, you know what? When I heard that Waltrip was going to be on Dancing with the Stars, I nearly fell out of my seat laughing because several years ago, you know, when all of us were kind of like, you know, armchair crew chiefs, very young ones, I had said that probably the driver that I can think of who would do Dance with Stars would be Michael Waltrip, and sure enough, here we are, 2014, and he's actually going to do it. I don't know how well he's going to be really. I mean, he could be voted off the very first episode, or he could stay on for a little bit of time. But I think that if he does pretty well, and if he's paired up with somebody, and if the voters do pretty call in and, you know, don't do Sabrina Bryan syndrome on him, then Michael will definitely, you know, stay in the competition for a little while.
Yes, Joe, give us your opinions, thoughts, concerns, whatnot.
Well, I think it's going to be very interesting to see him do this. I think that I don't know how good of a dancer he's going to be. I think his daughters are going to be a little embarrassed by this, probably. But I think it has potential to get a little notice of NASCAR. I mean, look what it did for Elio Castroneves. It really got him noticed. So I think that, I mean, can't hurt. But at the same time, it's kind of stupid. So I'll be interested to see it. I haven't watched the show in years. But now I will.
I never even watched it. I don't even really know what it is. But anyway, Kyle.
It's basically a ton of celebrities being stupid and dancing with, like, professional dancers with a ton of muscles.
Okay. Kyle.
I'm afraid I could top that, but you know, it's definitely not the first time that a race car driver is doing Dance with the Stars, of course, with Elio Castroneves. So I'm just wondering to see how coordinated Michael Waltrip is going into this, because I don't know. I don't know if he works out or what, but you know, I know he has. Of course, he's tall, but you know, I'm going to be interested to see how that is with Michael Waltrip and see how he does. I hope he could at least make it a few rounds and show them what they have. But like I said, I have no idea what's going to happen with that. So, you know,
Kyle, were you there at Pocono when they were announcing Christian Pejud as the driver for MWR? Were you there for that?
I wasn't. What happened?
Michael Waltrip walked in, and his hair was all messed up, and everyone was like, dang, what did Michael do? Did he wake up on the wrong side of the bed? He's like, no, guys, it was too tall to wake up on a bed. So I woke up on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he could show that his hairdo for the Dancing with the Stars. But, you know, just the possibilities are endless for that show. So I'll watch to see how he progresses through that.
I think NASCAR Joe is famous enough. We should get him on that show. But anyway, our next topic is Clay Rogers to attend Richmond for his NASCAR Sprint Cup Series debate. I'm going to start with Kyle on this one since I'm sure he knows a lot about him. Kyle?
Yeah, I think it's a good move for Clay Rogers. I mean, I've seen him run with the team Beard Motorsports in many series before, and, you know, they have shown the speed, just not the finishes. So I think this is a good move. And now what I've been reading from the press release is they plan to run, if they make it, they plan to run the whole race on Saturday night, no starting park. So I think he was actually going to attempt New Hampshire at first, but I think he withdrew, so that didn't happen. So I'm going to be interested to see, you know, if Clay Rogers can make this race. I mean, you know, with a short track, it's not like you're qualifying at a super speedway with the speed and everything. It's more equal at a short track. Speeds are closer. So I think he has a legitimate shot of making the race. You know, there's only 44 cars. He has to beat one car. And if they haven't done any testing or anything, I know with Matt Kraft and RIB Racing, when they tried to test into it, they just didn't have the testing. You know, and they were a little bit behind the eight ball and didn't make the race. So I'm just wondering to see, you know, is Rogers and that whole team prepped to run this race? And maybe they have tested, maybe they didn't, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how he can do in a cup car. Because I've seen him run, I think he ran a truck race last year. And he's run, of course, in the Pro Cup Series. And I think he might have won a championship there, too. So he's had the success. But wondering if he can show this and hopefully make the race and run the whole race on Saturday night.
Yo, Sife.
Yeah, my friend Dominic Argon actually broke this news yesterday. He saw the Beard Motorsports talking about this on Facebook. So he contacted Clay Rogers. And basically what's going to happen is Darren Shaw is going to be the crew chief. Jason Reiner is going to be the spotter. Jason is a very known spotter throughout the garage area. And they were originally going to race in New Hampshire, but they just didn't race because they weren't ready. And like Kyle said, if they do run the race, they're going to be running the full race. They're not there just to start and park it. And they have an engine that's built with used Hendrick Motorsports parts. And obviously the engine isn't extremely important at Richmond, considering you'll need a ton of horsepower, but you do need a decent engine to get around Richmond at a competitive rate. So, and they believe that they're going to qualify around 25th to 30th, but like we said, you need to be in the top 36 in order to qualify for the race. I think that's going to be a challenge for them. I don't see them doing it with a new team. Clay Rogers is obviously one of the best short track racers throughout the history of the recent history, at least, of racing. They tested a motor mile a couple of times over the last 6 to 8 months. About 5 times they've done it. So they have high expectations for this weekend. And if they could get through the race and actually make it, they're probably going to be attempting Martinsville and Phoenix, it seems like.
And throw it over to Glenn.
Well, you know what? This is obviously a new startup team, which means that this could cause some problems. But they do have a secret weapon with the Hendrick Motors, and it's been proven that a lot of times when you have a Hendrick Motor, you're going to find yourself either making the race or somewhere in the top half of the field. I am not sure if they can qualify for the race. I mean, if they do, that's fantastic for them. But it's a bold claim to say that they're going to run the whole race and not start in park, because there can be a plethora of things that can happen to that team, you know, between the time that they practice to the time that they qualify to the time that they race, that can happen that could end up having them park for the rest of the night. But if everything goes according to plan, probably I'm going to say, and this is just being roughly, you know, educated with how well their car would be, maybe top, probably 25th or worst is what I think is where they're going to finish.
All right. And our next topic of discussion is Jimmy Fanning to step down as crew chief at the end of the year, as this was reported live on ESPN during the race by Alan Bestwick. And I'm going to start with Glenn on this topic to give us his thoughts.
Jimmy Fanning, you know, he's been a fantastic crew chief, and it doesn't surprise me that, you know, he's stepping down, because, you know, he's been at this for quite a while. He's the crew chief the likes of, like, Mark Martin, Kurt Busch, pretty much anybody who has been there before. I believe he was also Carl Edwards' crew chief, if I'm not mistaken. So it doesn't surprise me, and, you know, it'd be sad to see him go.
Glenn, or Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Jimmy Fleming is a very respected crew chief throughout the NASCAR garage area. He was working with Mark Martin for years and years. He worked with David Ragan. He won the championship with Kurt Busch. He's definitely going to be remembered as one of the best crew chiefs over the past 30 years. He won 40 races, and he's going to have the season. He's going to have nearly 900 starts. That's a lot of starts as a crew chief, and that's very trying as a person. He took a little hiatus in 2006, obviously, working just a few races with Jamie McMurray and also Matt Kenseth in the Nationwide Series, just helping out Roush with the Nationwide program, really, being the director over there. And it seems like what he's going to do is go into a similar role that Matt Kenseth's former crew chief is now, Robbie Reiser. So I think they're going to be working together to get Roush Family Racing back in the right direction, mainly. And if anyone could do it, it's definitely Jimmy Fenning. I mean, he's come so close to championships so many times, and I just think that he's going to be, he has the potential to be a Hall of Famer. He has a championship. He was close with Mark Martin a ton. He was close with Matt Kenseth a ton. So you know what? Who knows? Maybe he'll come out on top and win one with Carl Edwards.
Yeah, I think it's a good time for him to go. I mean, he could have gotten it with Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Just that veteran experience to do that. But, of course, that's not going to happen now. So I think he's had a good career for him to hold up. You know, being with so many drivers, you know, being at Bobby Allison Motorsports, you know, working with, of course, at times rival Jimmy Spencer and Kurt Busch. I mean, that's just how ironic is that? Just being all over the place in NASCAR and, of course, having a very, very successful career being a crew chief. So, you know, of course, like the Joseph said, the championship 2004 with Kurt Busch. So, you know, definitely he has a lot on his resume. And, you know, and if he does stay with Roush and moves into another position, good for him. You know, he definitely has the leadership to do that. So, I mean, you know, I'm just interested to see how he and Carl Edwards will close out this year. Both, you know, of course, being the last season, like we've said, with Fenning on the box, and, of course, at Roush Fenway as being a crew chief, and, of course, with Carl Edwards being his last year as a driver as well at Roush Fenway.
All right, and now we're going to move on to a preview section for this weekend as the NASCAR Nationwide Series and Sprint Cup Series action moved into Richmond, and this is the final regular season race to get into the chase before it starts next week at the Chicagoland Speedway. I'm going to start with Kyle to give us his thoughts, and then after we move through everyone, we'll head into the open wall report.
Yeah, first with Nationwide, I mean, like I said earlier, you know, Kevin Harvick won last week. I expect the same this week. I think Kevin Harvick is going to be the guy to beat again. You know, watching the race in April, I mean, he had the best car, regardless of the rain. So, you know, I think Junior Motorsports cars are going to be strong. You might want to keep an eye on the Joe Gibbs cars, and I know I say that. You know, Joe Gibbs Racing only has 4 wins this year. Of course, 3 coming with Kyle Busch and then 1 with Elliott Sadler. With Kyle Busch's wins, of course, they've all come on a track mile or shorter. And, of course, Elliott Sadler was at Talladega, which is pretty much a crapshoot whenever anybody can win that race. So with that, I really think it's probably going to come down to, and it might come down to Kevin Harvick and Chase Elliott again. I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, when Chase Elliott was on that really good streak back in April, of course, winning his first 2 NASCAR Nationwide Series races back-to-back, and then, of course, finishing 2nd at Richmond. So I think you're going to see much of the same Friday night. And as for Saturday night, for the granddaddy of them all, the last race before the chase, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. There's so many scenarios right now. I think Ryan Newman's pretty much safe. He's 42 points to the good right now, so I think he's okay right now with the points. So, you know, it's that last chase spot. You know, it's going to come down either probably to Greg Biffle. Clint Boyer is 23 points out, and thinking about it, at Atlanta, that he didn't really have, you know, that was a killer night for that team, that they were in a garage. I mean, when Casey Kane won that race and eliminated that position, that was huge. And also, you know, speaking of our drivers, Kyle Larson, I mean, he just hasn't had the luck this year. He's had the fast cars. It's not the luck. You know, having those 3 bad weeks from, I think it was Sonoma, Kentucky, and Daytona, and then, of course, having the tire go down at Michigan and then the August race, and then, of course, having all kind of issues at Bristol. So I think they're still – it's a win-in-your-in situation. Much like this race probably is going to remind me about the first chase they ever ran back in 2004 with Jeremy Mayfield. I mean, he was on the outside looking in. He went from 14th to 9th winning that race. I mean, you could see something similar to that. Of course, not with the points like that, but you could see a Kyle Larson or Clint Boyer. Clint Boyer won this race. He's a 2-time winner at Richmond, so you could see him win this race on Saturday night. I don't think it's likely, but it could happen. And then, of course, Kyle Larson, you know, in the spring we couldn't really know much because of the first lap spin. So, you know, he never really worked his way back. So, I mean, there's a lot of questions going into Richmond. And, of course, with Tony Stewart, of course, having that great run up to the tire going down to Atlanta, I mean, he's won here before. It's been a while, but still, I mean, he still has a shot at winning this race and getting into the chase. So, right now, it's down to those three drivers, Newman, Boyer, and Biffle, in the field, I guess you could say, who are not in the chase. So, I think it's going to be an exciting race on Saturday night. You're going to see drivers do stuff you haven't seen all year. I just don't think we're going to see a repeat of last year, and I hope we never see that again, because we can't see that happen again. I mean, you know, when you break it all down and everything. So hopefully that we can avoid controversy on Saturday night, and we can have 16 drivers going for a championship, going for the 2014 chase for the Sprint Cup.
And now Glenn.
Well, you know what? Richmond, forget Bristol and Martinsville. Richmond is a pure short track. It is a true short track. It's a great little place to race at. And pretty much we're going to see a lot of the chrome horn being used. I mean, this is the final race before we set the field for the 10 race chase. So I would not be surprised to see a few drivers do a little bit of drastic move just to get to the front. A couple of drivers still to watch out for here at Richmond, one of them being Dale Earnhardt Jr. Jr. does pretty well at this racetrack, and he does have a couple of wins. He probably could have another one back in 2009 had Kyle Busch not spun him out. Another driver to watch for on this racetrack would be all the others that are trying to get in, like Greg Biffle. He will definitely be one to watch for. But the one driver that I think is going to be pretty darn good here at Richmond, you can't count him out. It's the Virginia native, Denny Hamlin. Hamlin has a hold of not only this track, but also Martinsville. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me that Denny Hamlin will probably win the pole and go on to win the race.
All right. Well, thank you, boys, for giving those. Joseph had to leave here a little early. And then now we're going to head over into Glenn's Open World Report. So, Glenn, this is Point Racer Podcast. Over to you, and give us your stuff on all Open World.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. And so now we come to far the end of the show, which is the Open World Report. And this was big. Now, although we were racing over at Landmark Speedway, we had a championship to decide right here in the Verizon IndyCar Series. It was the MAV-TV American Reel 500. So, here was a scenario. At this point, Will Power was up at the top of the heat by 51 points. If this race did not carry double points, Will Power would have already clinched out at Sonoma, and this would have been just a race to see who was going to win the final race of the year. But since this race carried double points, there was still mathematically three drivers left to decide who was going to be in it. Elio Castroneves, Will Power, and the long shot, Simon Pagenaud. So how about we get this race underway? Things got started pretty well for Elio Castroneves. Excuse me. Hold on one second. Let me fix my throat here. Okay, that's better. Things got started pretty early for Elio Castroneves as he started on the front row. Alongside him on the front row would be his teammate Juan Pablo Montoya and Joseph Newgarden for the Sarah Fisher-Hartman Racing Team. The green flag flew three wide start, and a brilliant start for Elio Castroneves as the first three cars went single file, and then Juan Pablo Montoya went to the high side to make the move on Elio Castroneves to make a pass for the race lead. In fact, Will Power would dominate for most of the race. And as we look back to the rest of the pack, everybody is doing just fine, but where's Will Power? Well, Will Power started way back in 21st, and what he ended up doing was this. Right at the green flag, he backed off a bit, thinking that there was going to be the big one, or like a big jam up at the front. Well, there wasn't, but he was able to rally his way through the field. Slowly but surely, he picked off cars one by one by one by one, picking up those ever-precious points. Trouble for Simon Pagenaud early in the race, as Pagenaud's car seemed to suddenly just fall apart on him. The car was not handling very well, and he would go two laps down at this point, which would ultimately take him out of the championship hunt. Meanwhile, Will Power is still moving his way up through the field. He tried to make a move on Graham Rahal somewhere in the race, but Rahal would not let him do it. Meanwhile, back at the front of the pack, Juan Pablo Montoya has some company from the Canadian, James Hinchcliffe, who took over the race lead in turn number four. Great pass right there. And then from pit stop, so Blaise and Pagano just about pit stop screwed himself up. Pit road on cold tires. He ended up getting a little squirrely at the exit of pit road. Luckily, he saved the car, and there was no yellow flag. And then at this point, Ryan Hunter-Reay is making some noise as he makes his way past Juan Pablo Montoya for the race lead. Good pass on the low side from him. And then Ryan's rear getting that, sorry. And then during pit stop, now Tony Kanaan is at the front of the heap after Juan Pablo Montoya has gone the pit road. But this was kind of a scary moment. Kanaan and Hunter-Reay going down the back straightaway. Charlie Kimball came up on the racetrack. Ryan Hunter-Reay flipped his way down to the bottom, was able to pass Charlie Kimball, but was not able to pass Tony Kanaan at this point. So, as we move ahead a little bit more, now Elio Castroneves is in the race lead, but trouble for Ryan Hunter-Reay. He ends up spinning himself at turn number four, goes to the infield. He did not hit anything, but this would bring out the first caution of the race, which would be towards the middle of the race. So pit stops took place, and Tony Kanaan leapfrogged a lot of the other cars to make his way to the front. So right now, it's Kanaan, Dixon, Power, Castroneves, and Montoya. So now the Ganassi boys are up there running 1-2. So let's go ahead and get the race back underway. Green flag flew, and everybody was single file except for about ninth on back. The cars went 2 wide, 3 wide, even 4 wide going into turn number one. Luckily, everybody raced just fine, and the speed went up to about 227. Now, Elio Castroneves and Will Power are battling for the first position. They are toe to toe and tripod to tripod. Now, Will Power put his way up in, or as he made his way up into the top three, and then he was second in sight on the race leader as here came Tony Kanaan right down to the low side to try and pass Scott Dixon for the race lead. Dixie had taken the lead right there, but look at this, going downstairs, Will Power passes Tony Kanaan and Scott Dixon for the race lead. Then another set of pit stops would be coming up as Tony Kanaan would retake the race lead away from Will Power, but there was some issues as well. One of the issues was Ed Carpenter. Carpenter was up at the front of the, or actually up at the top three, but a speeding ticket on pit road cost him some very bad time. However, he would recover from that. Then the biggest penalty possible. Elio Castroneves was hit with a drive-through penalty for going above the blend line. The rule states this. As you're coming to pit road, when you've made the commitment to come to pit road, you have to stay below the white line. You have to stay on the apron and come to pit road. Well, as he was hustling the car around, he ends up dipping two wheels out of the white line. So, unfortunately, he would be penalized with a drive-through penalty, and that would ultimately screw up his chances to win the championship. But at the end of the race, it was Tony Kanaan who wins his first race since the Indy 500 back in 2013, and your Verizon IndyCar Series champion for the first time in his career, Will Power, driver of the number 12 Verizon Chevrolet for Penske Racing, gets Penske's first championship in quite a long time, and also his first driver's championship. Finally, Will Power has always been the bridesmaid, but never the bride. We've seen it time and time again. He hit the wall in Homestead, screwing up his car. He spun out in 2012. In 2013, he won the race, but did not have enough points to catch Scott Dixon. But now he finally has the Astor Trophy to call his own. So let's take a look at the finishing order for the final time in IndyCar and see where your favorites are finished. Tony Kanaan won the race. Scott Dixon finished second. Ed Carpenter returned from that pit road speeding violation to finish third. Juan Pablo Montoya finished fourth. Seventh was Ryan Bristowe. Eighth was Carlos Munoz, who won the Verizon Rookie of, or excuse me, the Sunoco Rookie of the Year. Ninth was Will Power, and tenth was Joseph Newgarden to round out the top ten. Further on back we go. Marco Andretti, good finish for him. He finished 11th. Charlie Kimball finished 12th. Justin Wilson finished 13th. Elio Castroneves finished 14th. Jack Hawksworth finished 15th. 16th, Ryan Hunter-Reay. 17th, Sebastian Saavedra. 18th, Sebastian Bourdais. 19th, Graham Rahal. Simon Pagano finished 20th. And Carlos Huerta fell out of the race due to driver illness. And we only had 21 cars in the field because the 22nd car number 7, Mikhail Elishin, was supposed to start the race, but unfortunately he had a testing crash back on Wednesday night. His car ended up spinning out right in front of Charlie Kimball. He went into the air and went into the catch fence. Mateo Leishman was airlifted to a hospital where he was awake and alert and responding to a few commands. However, he did have some injuries as well. Some of these injuries include a broken wrist and a few other things. In fact, I'm flipping back through the stuff here so that we can see, you know, what the heck he did break. And unfortunately, he also broke some ribs and a few other things. But he is recovering right now, and he was also tweeting again. And so, thanks to the fans for, you know, sending in their prayers to keep him going. And just like that, the 2014 Verizon IndyCar Series season has come to a close, unfortunately, but it was a very fun season. And in another episode of Speedway Digest, we'll have a full review of the full 2014 season as we look forward to the 2015 season, which right now everybody is looking to see what is going to be on the schedule. Well, we do have a few confirmed dates. In fact, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 dates confirmed as of right now, including a doubleheader confirmed. So let's take a look at the schedule as it stands right now. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg is scheduled for March 29th. We do not know if this will be the season opening race or if this will be the third or second race in the season. Then we go to the inaugural Indy Grand Prix of Louisiana at NOLA Motorsports Park. That's scheduled for April 12th. Then it's off of the streets of Long Beach for the Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach, April 19th. Then the Honda Indy Grand Prix of Alabama, that's April 20th. And then, of course, May, we have the Andy List Grand Prix of Indianapolis. And on May 9th. And on May 24th, the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. We are one Indianapolis 500 away from the 100th. And then the first doubleheader, or probably the only doubleheader of this year, will be the Chevrolet Indy Duel in Detroit, presented by Click and Loans. That's at Belle Isle, May 30th through the 31st. And then the last confirmed date is the Firestone 600 at Texas Motor Speedway in June. Now, as it stands right now, there have been a lot of rumors that have been going on. One of them states that Auto Club Speedway will get a late June date. It's either going to be June 20th or June 27th. It depends on what happens. Another rumor is stating that the Milwaukee Mile will get the season finale race. I kind of hope that Milwaukee does get the season finale, because the Milwaukee Mile has been a track that has been, you know, iffy in terms of, you know, going coming back for another season or something. So if it gets that final race of the year to decide the championship, not only would it be on an oval, but it would also bring a lot of people to the Milwaukee Mile and basically keep people coming back to that racetrack. Now, even though Auto Club Speedway put on a great show for all of its season finales, the problem is our weather, all right? We were lucky last year in 2013 to have a race in October where it was perfect fall weather. It was nice and crisp, cooling down at 92 degrees. Now, in June, we are pretty hot, but we don't get to the 100s until we get into July or August. So June is probably going to be a better deal. And, the Houston Grand Prix, or the Houston doubleheaders, have been canceled for 2015 due to scheduling issues. So that to say that we will not be going back there for 2015. So we'll have more on the IndyCar series as news comes out. But now we head over to the F1 series. Well, the F1 series is not even one of my favorite racetracks. It is the Formula One Gran Premio d'Italia 2014 at the Autodromo di Monza. This 11-turn track is freaking awesome. You're going to see a lot of speed, and you're going to see a lot of drivers gunning towards the front. In fact, there's about 4 to 5 good passing zones. One of them, most notably, is going through turn number 3 as you make your way up to turn 4 and 5. There are two DRS activation zones. There's one halfway down the back straightaway, and then there's one coming out of turn number 11 and going out of the front stretch just before you hit turn number 1 as well. 53 laps will make up the running, and in the track record here was set by Rubens Barrichello in 2004, 121.046. Now, we also have a little preview of the 2015 Formula One season because we can actually give you the drivers and teams that are currently confirmed to their rides. So, starting with the Caterham Renault team, they don't even have their drivers yet. As a matter of fact, Caterham is kind of up in the air right now, so they will be moved aside. Moving on to the Ferraris, we know we have Kimi Raikkonen and Fernando Alonso are currently listed. Fernando Alonso did say, or the rumor did say, that he would end up maybe going back to McLaren, but he came out and said that he denies ever talking to McLaren, so we'll see what happens there. Moving on to the Force India Mercedes team, they have Sergio Perez and Nico Hülkenberg, cars 11 and 27. Then over to the Lotus Mercedes team. Yes, notice the change in engines. Used to be the Lotus Renault team, but they're going to go with Mercedes Power next year. And they currently have Pastor Maldonado signed, and they do not have a second driver signed yet. The McLaren Honda team, with Honda returning as an engine provider, and the Marussia F1 team, they do not have their drivers yet. Nor does Marussia have an engine package yet. There was a rumor saying that they would be back with Ferrari. There's another one that says they would go to Renault, but we'll see what happens with the little Marussia team. Moving on to the Mercedes right now, the AMG Petrons F1 team that houses Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton. Pretty much those drivers are back as well, cars number 6 and 44. The Infiniti Red Bull Racing team has Daniel Ricciardo and Sebastian Vettel. Vettel would take over the 5. Next year if he does not claim the title this year. Then over to the Toro Rosso team, which currently runs Ferraris but does not have an engine package for next year. They have Daniel Kvyat in car 26 and the new driver, Max Verstappen, whose number is to be announced. And then finally the Williams-Martini team, the Williams-Mercedes team with Felipe Massa and Valtteri Bottas in cars 19 and 77. So right now, those are the only things that we know of in terms of drivers. But hopefully, we'll see some more as we go along. And, of course, you know, there's also the talk of the new noses coming in, and we'll have to see what happens with those. So like that, we come to the very end of the show. We want to thank you all for tuning in. And, of course, if you want to follow the entire crew, on Twitter, you can simply go to Speedway, to @SpeedwayDigest, and you'll be able to find their handles. I am IndyCarGL2488, and you can also catch me on Facebook at the same name, facebook.com/IndyCarGL2488, and, you know, friend me, and we can talk racing, we can talk IndyCar, all kinds of really cool things, and, you know, all the kind of cool stuff. So, and just a reminder for the IndyCar fans, just because the season is done does not mean the news is done. You know, we'll definitely have some more updates as we get them, and we'll probably confirm a few more dates. So from all of us, to all of you here on Speedway Digest, you've been listening to Speedway Digest here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the race as we set the field for 16 drivers to gun for the championship. Who will be the 4 drivers that will compete at Homestead to claim the title, and who will be at the top. So, see you next time, everybody.